Good day and welcome to the Karbon Investor Update 2025. My name is Trisha and I will be your Evercall coordinator. The format of the call includes prepared remarks from the company, followed by a question and answer session, at which point attendees will have an opportunity to ask questions live. Attendees are also welcome to submit questions in writing via the Ask a Question button found on the upper right of the Deal Roadshow. At this time, I will turn the call over to Paul Fiddeman, Group Chief Executive of Karbon Homes. You may now begin.
Thank you, Trish, and a very warm welcome to everyone to this Karbon Investors Update for January 2025. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully some interesting things to talk to you about today. You can see there that I'm joined today by my colleague Scott Martin, and James Clifford. Scott is our Executive Director of Resources, and James is our Assistant Director of Strategic Finance and Treasury. And there's a little bit of background information about each of us there, and even a slightly grizzly looking mugshot. And I can tell you I've got a few more grey hairs than that now, but there you go. Moving on to the next slide. That's kind of boilerplate disclaimer, as you might imagine. Just to point out that the information used in these slides is intended only for this update, shouldn't be used for any other purposes. And where we have forward-looking numbers and updates, these have not been audited and therefore don't come with any kind of guarantee. So just to make you aware of that. On slide four, we have the agenda. So I'll be talking to you with a brief overview of what we've been up to and a strategic update, and then going through some operational highlights. And I'll hand over to Scott, who will talk about development and assets. James will talk to you about our treasury position, and then Scott will come back in and talk about financial results, I'll come back in at the very end just to kind of wrap up and give a quick observation on the operating environment for Karbon. So that's where we're hoping to go. So let's get straight into the strategic overview. And James is whisking through the slides there. So just to kind of give you a very helicopter level version of what we've been up to as an organization. In terms of operational performance, it's going really well for us, despite some quite challenging operating circumstances. We have been maintaining and improving the standard and quality of what we do, and we have been investing significantly in our frontline repairs and maintenance services, because obviously that is the thing that customers repeatedly tell us is the most important thing for us to get right. Like a lot of housing associations, we had accumulated a bit of a backlog of repairs during pandemic, and that was exacerbated by some freak weather events a couple of years ago. And we've been experiencing high levels of demand for the service for a variety of reasons. So we've put a lot of focus and effort into making sure that the work in progress on repairs has returned to something like pre-pandemic levels. And we're delighted to report that that is now where we are. So work in progress is less than 1 month's worth of repairs, which is a good position for a housing association to be in. And we are seeing the benefit of this investment. The volume of work in progress jobs has reduced by nearly a quarter since the start of this financial year. Great results. And tenant satisfaction, whilst you won't see that in the half year position, is starting to improve quite significantly in the third quarter of this financial year. So we're seeing the impact of that investment on customer satisfaction, which is great. And we've had an experience of reduced tenancy turnover this year, so people are staying with us longer, that reduces the amount of income we lose through having empty properties, and means that we're not incurring the same volume of costs from reinstating properties back to lettable standard when people move out. So we've also maintained high standards of landlord compliance. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit. So customer safety remains an important priority for us, and we're making sure that we invest as appropriate to deliver on that. And finally, we have continued to grow. So Leaders Homes joined Carbon in July 2024, and we continue to deliver our development program under our Homes England strategic partnership. So there's still growth in Carbon. Moving on a slide, we've just reminded you of what we see as the key credit highlights. So we're up towards 34,000 homes now. We have maintained our A rating and moved to a positive outlook during the year. So that was good news. And in December, we've just had our annual review of our viability and governance ratings and confirmed those at G1 V1, which is the highest that the regulator is disposed to hand out. We don't yet have a C rating, for those of you who've been following that. That comes with a formal inspection, and we haven't had one. Last inspection was almost 3 years ago, and they're on a four-yearly cycle. So all things being equal, you should perhaps expect us to be receiving an inspection and receiving a C rating on consumer regulation sometime in the spring of 2026. But that is obviously subject to a number of potential variables, including the capacity of the regulator. So don't hold me to that. We have, in our view, a business which is a low-risk model. We don't do a lot outside of core social housing. Our exposure to market sales risks is very modest, which we'll talk about in a little while as well. And then along the bottom of the slide there in the lighter blue, you'll see some highlights from our financial data, which James and Scott will say a lot more about later, including the significant headroom that we have on our lender covenants, which is an important safety valve for us as an organization as well, I think. Moving on a slide, during the year, we went through a refresh of our strategy, and unsurprisingly, perhaps, we ended up concluding that the three strategic priorities that we had as an organization still remain valid. So homes, customer, and place remain in place as our three key strategic priorities. They are underpinned by what we call enablers of success. So these are the kind of key corporate things that we need to be good at to ensure that we can deliver on the three operational priorities. And along the bottom there, those are our values, and we sort of deliberately put them there as the foundation of all of the work that we do. Moving on a slide, we just have on the next slide an indication of our growth timeline. Regular visitors to this update will be familiar with a lot of this. So Carbon was formed in April 2017 from a merger of three organizations which had their roots in new organizations in the 1970s. So we have deep roots back into our local communities here. And then you can see that we've maintained a regular drumbeat of new additions to the group, some of which have come in the forms of simple acquisitions of property, some of which have come in as subsidiaries. And you know that York Housing Association and Leeds and Yorkshire Housing merged a couple of years ago to become our subsidiary 54 North. And the latest addition to the family is Leaders Homes. So they joined us in July 2024. I'm going to say a little bit more about them in a minute. On the next slide, just a graphical representation of Carbon's geography. So to the east of the Pennines is essentially the property that we own and manage, which is around 34,000 homes, running from Berwick on the Scottish border down to places like Barnsley and Beverley in the East Riding of Yorkshire. We also deliver services to about 9,000 homes belonging to other housing associations through our subsidiary Carbon Solutions, which is a not-for-profit venture, and enables us to deliver those services without the addition of VAT, which is important because it can be a barrier to housing associations providing services to each other. So that's been very successful and is also growing rapidly. But that is largely responsible for the carbon footprint to the west of the Pennines into Carlisle and the Lake District and down into into Lancashire there. So that's just a quick reminder of carbon's geography. On the next slide, we've just included a few facts and figures about Leesers Homes, our latest addition. They came in as a subsidiary, so we've protected their identity. We will be reviewing the governance arrangements for Leesers in due course, but for now they are a subsidiary with 759 homes all in Newcastle. There is a relatively high proportion of supported and specialist accommodation in there, and most of that portfolio is relatively recently built, so it delivers some fairly strong financial metrics because we're not in a situation where we're investing heavily in that portfolio because it's relatively new. So that was one of the attractions for that particular portfolio. It is something that complements our existing supported housing offer and brings with it a very strong skill set in managing supported housing as well. So there's a useful synergy and some of our own activity coming through that that acquisition. Moving on a slide, you probably picked up from our 6 month results release that we are in the process of registering a new for-profit housing association. Developing new affordable homes is a challenging activity and is very capital intensive. So we are of the view that we could increase our capacity by structuring some of the financing of that in a different way. So this is a vehicle that would enable investors to invest on an equity basis into affordable housing, and we think that that will be a useful addition to our funding mix. We have a long established, well connected and very effective development team, so the ability to deliver additional homes through that structure feels to us like a very welcome one. So that expansion will allow us to expand our operations, increase our economies of scale, and generate further efficiency by spreading our overheads a little thinner across our portfolio. That is all welcome in the current climate. Moving on, we have the one-page summary of our sustainability activity from our ESG report for 23-24. You'll see a range of measures there. Perhaps just draw attention to a couple of them. The top right there, you'll see the percentage of homes at this point in time, which was the year end, 24, that were achieving EPCC energy standard. So that was at 74%. Right now, it's improved to around 77%. As a combination of investment that we've been making in our portfolio and the addition of new and better performing assets through development growth and mergers. So those things are coming together. We have a plan to ensure that we get to EPCC for all of our stock by 2030, which is the current statutory requirement.
And then we have plans to deliver investment to improve our stock to net zero beyond that. So that's a longer term aspiration for us. Moving on, we have a slide. We're moving on into operational performance. So if James can just flick forward a couple of slides. But we will see there our balanced scorecard for our operational performance. These are the key things against each of our strategic priorities that enable us to monitor in real time how we're doing. So this is what the whole organization sees at our monthly briefings, just so everybody in the organization has visibility of how we're doing. I'm going to talk through some of these in a bit more detail in a minute. We have set ourselves an aspiration as an organization to be top quartile in our peer group across the full range of those indicators. That's obviously quite a challenging aspiration, and we're not quite there on some of them. But generally speaking, I think performance is looking quite strong during this financial year, and we'll go on to examine bits of that in more detail. So, James, if you can move us on to the customer KPIs. So you'll see there that customer experience. We are looking at customer satisfaction scores. So we ask people to rate us in terms of their experience of us as an organization overall. You will be aware that the regulator introduced for the first time a set of customer satisfaction metrics, so TSMs as they know, tenant satisfaction measures. We actually at the year end were upper quartile across the whole basket of TSMs, so we're really pleased with that, but we believe that we need to go further and faster, so we set ourselves a particularly challenging target for customer experience at 89%. So far, year to date, we were at 82% when this was measured. It, as I mentioned earlier, it is strengthening, but we probably won't achieve the 89% overall for the year. We are launching a program of investment in our core services, which we're calling Good to Great, for obvious reasons, and that will see us developing our digital offer and looking to improve our customer experience. And also our colleague experience, which is obviously a key driver of that customer experience. Occupancy is looking very healthy. The outturn at this point was 1.67% rent loss through voids against a target of 1.87. So positive because of lower tenancy turnover. As I mentioned, people are staying put longer. And that is good news because it has a range of knock-on effects on cost and rent recoverability. And then we have a single measure which approximates all of the different building safety and compliance measures that we track as an organization. So this 99.97% compliance is an amalgam across a range of indicators. We are very strong at the moment on things like gas servicing because we only had two properties outstanding at the end of November, and they were both subject to legal action to ensure we could get access to carry out our responsibilities there. So a very strong performance across the board on building and customer safety. Looking ahead a slide to the development, homes in place indicators. The development program is one that we measure. So the 1.98% addition of new homes, that's 1.98% of existing portfolio, would be an upper quartile target. It's gone a little slower than we anticipated, but we do expect to be at or close to that target by the end of the financial year. So Lots of recovery activity going on there. I've talked about the decarbonisation target there, so ahead of target and performing strongly on that one. And our indicator for neighbourhood satisfaction, which whilst it hasn't achieved the target we set for ourselves, is well ahead of what others of similar organisations are experiencing in the sector. So that's quite a strong performance as well. Moving on, we then have our enablers. So we have indicators that cover colleague engagement, financial capacity, and value for money. You can see that the colleague engagement score at plus 45, which is our net promoter score for employee engagement, is a very healthy one compared to the indicator that we set ourselves. We have this measured by an independent survey, and the survey company tell us that plus 45 is an extremely good result, so we're pleased with that. And that is showing steady progression in the right direction in terms of more engaged colleagues and people who would recommend Carbon as a place to work. You'll know that net promoter scores can run on a range from between minus 100 and plus 100, so plus 45 is very presentable. Financial capacity, we're a little ahead of where we thought we would be in terms of EBITDA NRI interest cover, but that's good news. And the value for money indicator there is our cost per unit, which is benchmarked as well, and turns out in the lowest, the cheapest, if you like, quartile. So that's another quartile performance within £4 of our target. So it's representing pretty strong cost control, I think. So lots to be pleased of about that. So moving on a slide, I mentioned that we have strong performance on our tenant satisfaction metrics. These are the various indicators that the regulator is now collecting across the sector. You can see there that the bars that end in the blue are the Carbon scores. The yellow band that cuts across those bars is the sector top quartile, and you can see that in every instance Carbon is comfortably ahead of top quartile in the sector. So that's a good news story in terms of tenant satisfaction, not one to be complacent about, but one that we can build on, and through the good to great investment that we're planning, we're hoping we can further strengthen that metric, or that range of metrics. Moving on a slide, to slide 20, just a little bit about customer safety in there. We have a very forensic focus on our buildings and making sure that they are safe. We have maintained that focus throughout the year, making sure that we carry out surveys of our larger and more complex buildings to ensure they meet fire and other safety standards. In general, our stock represents a low risk profile, so much of it is comprised of houses and bungalows. We have 580 blocks of two or more homes, and only six meet the definition of a high rise building under the Building Safety Act. So in that sense, it's a relatively low risk portfolio that we operate. We measure not only that kind of dimension, but we also look at the occupants and make an assessment about their vulnerability, informing our action plans around safety and where we invest. So it's a hybrid of the physical condition and type. But it's also a function of who's living in the homes as well, and that drives our investment in customer safety. So lots of work being going on there, and I think we're pleased to report that we feel that we're well on top of that programme of investment, and it hasn't had the same impact on us as it perhaps has on some of the organisations in other parts of the country. And moving on a slide, just effectively a case study to show some of that in action. You will have access to the slides. I won't dwell on this, but there's a very successful intervention on an extra care scheme in Northumberland at the Manors, where we've been investing around about £500,000 in a fire safety programme of investment, working in partnership with a contractor. A project that took 3 months to go through, so all of the 46 apartments in there retrofitted with fire safety measures, including sprinklers. So a very successful intervention and quite representative of what we're doing across our portfolio at the moment. That's probably enough from me in terms of performance. I'm going to now hand over to Scott and ask him to take you through the slides on our development and asset management activities. So over to you, Scott.
Thank you, Paul, and good afternoon or good morning, everybody, depending on where you are, and thank you for joining us. If we move on to the next slide, which has some details around our development programme and our pipeline, I'd just like to draw your attention to the bar chart on the right. Unfortunately, we've had some gremlins in the system, and so you might notice that the total number of homes has been added to the makeup of new home delivery, effectively doubling up on that graph. So we are not delivering nearly 1,600 new homes. We're delivering just shy of 800 in this year at 770. So apologies for that gremlin. We'll correct that on the slides that will be publicly available soon on our website. But if I can continue, the key driver of our programme over the first 5 years that we've shown here is our strategic partnership with Homes England. Through that agreement, we're planning to deliver 2,200 new homes and receive grants in excess of £165 million. Our group target for the year is 770 homes, with around 578 being delivered by the parent company and nearly 200 being delivered by our subsidiary in Yorkshire, 54 North Homes. So our business plan includes provision for new development for affordable and social rent and for some market sale throughout the 30 years of the plan. You'll see a reduction in development towards FY29. This doesn't reflect aspiration, it reflects uncertainty around the grant regime under this new Labour government. And we do expect some further clarity on this and the new grant regime, hopefully in the spring or summer spending review, whenever that comes. And as Paul mentioned, we have looked at setting up a for-profit housing association, which hopefully will be able to keep our development aspirations at a reasonable level. But our primary focus remains on our core social housing activity. We have grown our commercial development experience. We've got a small amount of development there for outright sale programme, mainly through partnerships with other house builders, limiting our risk and making it a small but less risky part of our plan. So if you can move over to the next slide, please. You can see that we've got a very busy development programme. We have around 33 active development sites, and there's some examples there. We have a mixture of some very large sites. So we have 750 homes at Sea and Garden Village, which are now well underway, but also some smaller sites, such as the examples on the screen shown in Thirsk, and they'll generate about 108 new homes, and Caton near Scarborough, which will deliver about 126 new homes. Our development programmes mostly comprised of family housing to meet local needs and delivered at high energy efficiency standards. So not only do we do normal family homes, but we have some extra care schemes as well. So we recently agreed new schemes in South Tyneside and Northumberland. And in those, we work closely with local authority partners who have identified a clear housing need, and they help to ensure that these schemes are a financial success for us. So moving on to the next slide, please. Now, we do recognise the challenges that are needed for housing to meet net zero by 2050. And while the road to 2050 appears to be a long one, there's measures that we are taking today to try and address those issues. So there's some examples there are that we are gradually increasing the energy performance of the homes that we build. All our houses are now built to EPC B as a minimum, with an increasing percentage at EPC A, which you can see on the bar chart on the right-hand side. Our approach is very much a fabric-first one, which means that we concentrate on getting the structure of the home right before we invest in new technologies. You could call this a no-regret policy, as any step to net zero requires the home to be well insulated before you add in new technology to that. And finally, we are learning. So we're understanding in small trials how customers are adapting to new technologies such as air source heat pumps, solar panels, batteries, and other modern methods of construction. And there's a couple of examples there as to how we're dealing with that. But if we can go to the next slide, please. Whilst we do a lot of development, we don't forget about the investment required in existing homes. We did complete a comprehensive stock survey in FY24, and we've had our cost estimates externally validated. We are carrying out a stock condition survey for Leaser's Homes, our recent acquisition, at the end of this financial year. So we will have a hopefully close to 100% data very soon. And these numbers that we've shown here in terms of major repairs will ensure that we meet our EPC target of FY30 as planned. So moving on to the scale of the challenge that EPC and net zero presents. We already have EPC C built into our plan at a cost of just over £17 million. And we've got a very clear roadmap of how we need to get there. For net zero, for carbon only, we think this is going to be around about £654 million. And that's net of any improvement, any other improvements that we would otherwise be making. So we've there's no double counting there for things like new window insulation standards over and above the existing standard double glazing standards. So we think it's around about £650 million. And that will apply to the vast majority of properties. And across the group, that figure rises to somewhere in the region of £750 million. And clearly we're looking to government and hoping to hear more from them on how this might be funded and delivered. So now I'm going to pass over to James, who's briefly going to talk through our treasury position. So handing over to you, James.
Thank you very much, Scott. Hello, everybody. So I'll begin with our treasury position at the half year point, which is looking very strong. Our loan book at September was £720 million across the group, and 93% of our drawn facilities are on fixed interest rates. And there's ample capacity within the group for more debt. We have undrawn facilities at September, all of which of £172 million, all of which is fully secured and ready to draw. We have excess security with current lenders, and with security trustees totaling £282 million, and unencumbered stock at a security value of £399 million and growing all the time. In December, 54 North accessed a nominal £20 million through the Affordable Housing Guarantee Scheme. Half of this will be used to deliver new homes, and the other half will be invested in existing stock. And some of you may be aware that late in December, Carbon Homes invited bids from current and new lenders as it seeks at least £65 million of new loan facilities in line with our business plan expectations and our liquidity rules. In the summer of 2024, we renegotiated terms with our lenders and private investors, and this helpfully removed major repairs expenditure from our interest cover covenant calculations. This has given us huge capacity in our business plan compared to our loan covenant obligations. And a picture of those new loan covenants are set out here. On the left-hand side, our approved plan shows interest cover in excess of 300% over the next 10 years, and that's set against a covenant minimum requirement of 120%. And it's a similar picture with gearing. we are forecasting a maximum gearing level of 38%, and that compares to a covenant level of 65%. So in summary, with our excess security and unencumbered stock, we have the capacity to take on significantly more debt, and we have the headroom in our lender covenants to do so. And that gives the group real flexibility when deciding how to profile our future investment needs. And that's all from me. So I'm just going to invite Scott now just to talk through some more of our financials.
Thanks, James. So I'm going to start with the results for half one FY25, which some of you may have seen published towards the end of last calendar year. So you'll have seen that overall we've seen a drop in our surplus before tax from £21.8 million to £16.9 million. The key factor has been the accounting treatment of goodwill on acquisition of other housing associations. So that in 2023, the amalgamation with South Tyneside Ventures Trust led to a credit on the income statement of £4.7 million. Whereas the addition of Leeser's Homes in 24 resulted in a cost on the income statement of £1.3 million. The difference in the figures doesn't relate to the financial health of the incoming organisations, but rather the different accounting treatments for entities joining the group as a subsidiary versus those which fully amalgamate into an existing group entity. But if we set these adjustments aside, we can see that our surplus has actually grown by around 1.1 million compared to the same time last year, and that's shown in the bottom right hand box. Our turnover has grown by nearly 10 million in that time, but we've also invested more in frontline services, repairs, maintenance and housing management that Paul mentioned earlier. The management accounts at the half year point show we are behind our target, which is our budget, and the bullet points there explain some of the reasons why we are seeing pressure on the organisation, as Paul pointed out, and that is continuing throughout the year. Away from the income statement, we do expect our capital expenditure to increase by about £2.3 million this year, and that's driven by more major repairs on our existing stock. This is very much in line with the trends for the sector, and we will be building greater provision for planned and responsive major repairs into future financial planning. So if we move on to the next slide, please. We traditionally show you some information for reference, which is maybe quite helpful. It's got the backward and the forward looking picture of Carbon's financials at the time of the submission of the FFR to the regulator in June last year. It shows that our EBITDA is very firmly driven by our core social housing business. It also shows how our capitalised major repairs expenditure has grown since 2022. In part, this is due to a natural cycle of investment, which we've been signalling for some time, but it also reflects the additional requirements to meet EPCC and an increased responsiveness to customer demand. If we can move on, please. On the slides, James. Thank you. These are the financial metrics that are reviewed by board. They are our margin, our interest cover, and debt divided by EBITDA MRI. All the stats include MRI, and these follow the S&P published methodology. And the graphs do show a medium and longer term trend of improvement. Our debt ratio and interest cover graphs, middle and right-hand sides, do show some challenges in the short term and reflect the increasing investment required to deliver new homes under the Homes England strategic partnership that we're part of. But once this heightened level of investment is achieved, all the metrics do show capacity to do more in later years. So that's all for me for now. I'll leave you with Paul to take you through the outlook for Carbon and the wider sector. So over to you, Paul.
Thanks, Scott, and well done to everyone for staying with us to this point. I won't labour this because I want to leave some time for questions, but it is an interesting time for the sector. We have a new Labour government, and they've made housing an important priority, as you will undoubtedly be aware. So they've set themselves a 1.5 million homes by the end of the Parliament target, which is looking very, very challenging. But we shall see what they are prepared to do to assist in delivering that target in the spending review, which is due in the spring. We are waiting with bated breath to see what kind of rent settlement we get. You're probably aware that pre-Christmas we had a consultation on a long-term or a five-year rent settlement at CPI plus 1% for 5 years, which is very welcome news for the sector. And it's also very welcome to hear the current Deputy Prime Minister making public statements about how she would like to see some rent convergence, which for those of you familiar with the sector is a process of moving existing rents to a target rent calculated in accordance with quite a complex calculation. But in the context of carbon's numbers, that would be very positive in terms of delivering increased revenue and would offset some of the damage done by some of the rent caps that we've experienced in the last 10 years or so. So that would be very welcome news. And if that is accompanied by a generous grant settlement for the next affordable housing grant, that would be brilliant. So we're looking forward to announcements on that, with a new programme hopefully to bid against and be in place from 2026 onwards. Lots to look forward to. I won't go too deeply into some of that other stuff. Perhaps it's worth mentioning that the national insurance contribution increases did sort of dampen our enthusiasm for the rent settlement the next year. It has had a negative financial impact on next year's figures, but it was well trailed, so I suppose we shouldn't have been particularly surprised by any of that. And the other big unknown for the sector is the impact of some of the further regulatory interventions that we understand are likely to come during the course of this year. So you perhaps be aware that there is a new decent home standard being worked up, which is meant to apply both to the affordable and to the private rental sectors. So it'll be interesting to see what obligations that places on the sector. And also we're waiting to see the final version of AWAB's law, which was passed into legislation last year, but has been subject to consultation about the precise way in which it will be implemented in the future. So lots to look forward to, and lots of opportunities. And I mentioned earlier in the presentation our Good to Great programme. We see significant potential to take cost out of the business over the next 2 or 3 years, and those savings we anticipate would be recurring. So we're looking forward to working our way through that and seeing just what we can deliver. The forecasts that we prepare as an organisation don't rely on any of that currently, so that would be upside for us as well. And we're hoping that our for-profit housing association subsidiary would enable us to bring additional and more diverse funding into the group to enable us to either maintain or extend our development capacity, depending on what happens with the wider grant settlement. That's probably enough from me. It's probably appropriate to hand you back to Evercall and move into a question and answer session. But thank you very much for your attendance and for listening to our presentation. And please do ask questions on anything that you've heard from us today or anything else that is on your mind about carbon and the sector. So back to Evercall.
Thank you. We will now conduct the question and answer session. If at any point you'd like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Deal Roadshow and type in your question. And if you would like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. And if you have joined via web, please press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We will pause here briefly to allow any questions to generate.
Trish, I see there's a written question in from Jake. Shall we go to that one first, I think?
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. Our first question is a written question from Jake at Columbia Threadneedle Investments. The question is, hi, I have a question on the forecasts. What is driving declining EBITDA MRI, and when was this assessment done? Does this factor in efficiencies?
That's probably a good one to point towards Scott in the first instance.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the question, Jake. The EBITDA MRI, which I think you just clarified, is coverage for interest cover. As we put in the slides when we had the large table, we are seeing a new phase of our stock investment cycle coming up. So I think we're about 10 million year on year, which is about a third increase from last year to this year. We're about 40 million investment this year, and that will grow to 50 million over the next few years. So yes, we've got pressure from the stock investment cycle that we're in. If we think about when the organization came about, a lot of the predecessor organizations were local authorities, and they had an investment cycle before those units were handed over, and you know, we're just back into that cycle again. So it is a up and down investment cycle that we've been signalling for some time. So that is one of the reasons behind that. Obviously, we've added on EPCC since then, but also the recent challenges around responsive repairs. So following the tragic case of Awa Bishak, we have seen an increase in repairs. We've spent a lot more money on performing responsive repairs and expect to do so for certainly the short to medium term. So that has put pressure on our margins because of those costs, particularly when you include MRI, and factored into that a very small impact of having increased interest rates. Obviously, we've only got about 7% floating interest rates, but they are a factor which increases the interest in that ratio. So hopefully, Jake, that answers your question.
Scott, can I just supplement that answer, which was great? But it's probably worth colleagues just knowing a little bit of context around some of that. So a significant proportion of Carbon's portfolio was acquired in the stock transfer activity of the 2000s. So this was where local authorities couldn't afford to generate the capital to invest in their existing homes, so transferred them out to housing associations with the requirement to invest significantly in those portfolios. We're now 20 years on from that initial investment, so components like kitchens and bathrooms kind of come around again and require a further visit and a further upgrade. So you'll see quite a chunk of investment coming through on the back of that in our plans for the future. So hopefully that just is a bit of context, Jack.
Thank you, team. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. And if you have joined via web, please click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Deal Roadshow and type in your question, or press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We will pause here briefly to allow more questions to generate.
And Tricia, if I can just supplement Jake, I've just noticed, does this factor in efficiencies in referring to Jake's previous question? It hasn't got the efficiencies in that we're anticipating from the Good to Great program. So yes, those numbers haven't yet been factored into the business plan. I see we have a new question from David.
Thank you, team. Our next question is a written question from David at Insight Investment Management. The question is, more clarity on the for-profit deal, please.
So who's best placed to answer that one? I can talk about the sort of principles of it. I wonder, James, if you wanted to say a little bit about some of the modelling assumptions that you've been working with so far. So just the principle is to introduce into the group a new way of attracting investment into our development activities, and ideally one that won't have the same kind of impact on some of those debt ratios that we were looking at earlier. So for-profit housing associations, as the name suggests, are able to distribute profits and therefore are open to equity investment. Our vision initially was that we would capitalise that subsidiary with some property of our own, which would then match fund through some investment of equity directly into that vehicle, which would then be invested into new homes, which would generate the desired level of return for investors. But that's the model in a kind of very bold sort of summary form. James, did you want to say a little more about that?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, I think it links to the last question. We know that we're entering a cycle where we need to invest more in our existing homes, which obviously puts pressure on the interest cover and our debt ratios. But we don't want that obligation to improve things for existing customers to fetter our ambition to keep building. There's clear demand and capacity in our region for new homes, and there's an imperative from the new government to get building. Our idea is that we don't have to own every property that we build in future, and we can develop new homes, we can manage them, we can operate them, but we don't necessarily have to take on debt to own them at the end. So we are setting up this vehicle with the idea of attracting capital that wants safe, patient, steady returns over a long period, which is exactly what social housing can offer.
Thanks, James. Chris, do you want to go to Jake's question on fire safety?
Thank you, team. Our next question is a written question from Jake at Columbia Threadneedle Investments once again. The question is, what is your costing for fire safety, PA, and versus what you're spending currently?
That's perhaps something that either Scott or James might have a more precise view on. I have a feeling that the budget for the current year is in the order of 14 million, so that gives you a sense. But that's right across all of our compliance activity, that's not just fire safety. So that gives you a sort of feel for quantum. Scott, James, do you have any further detail for Jake?
No, that's absolutely right, Paul. About £14 million per annum. So, and there is some additional work which we're just working on the minute, which is coming out of the Building Safety Act and the Fire Safety Act. So that is likely to be increased. We can't give an exact figure on that because we have reports that are being worked through with the fire authorities at the minute. But we do see that £14 million increasing over the next few years. And it'll be increasing in the order of, a large number, a seven-figure number. It's not going to be hundreds of thousands of pounds. It's more likely to be a few million pounds. But yes, we haven't got final confirmation of the next 3 or 4 years additional work from the Building Safety Act and Fire Safety Act just yet.
Okay.
Thank you, team. Apologies, please proceed.
I was just going to say, David's asked another couple of questions which you might want to put together.
Absolutely, thank you. Our next question is a multi-part question from David at Insight Investment Management. The first question is, you're a neutral having a POS outlook on the A rating. Do you need to be A-plus rated?
We wouldn't disagree with you, David, but I think the whole sector is under significant scrutiny at the moment. And I think the fact that we are entering a period of heavy investment in our existing portfolio is on the minds of the credit rating agencies when they're thinking about some of this. Scott, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think that's why we wanted to show those graphs to you today. You can see in the short term there is pressure on particularly the debt and the interest cover ratios. You know, we think fundamentally we're still a strong business. We are not aspiring internally to be an A positive rated, an A plus rated entity. We're happy with where we are. But yes, I can see the credit rating agencies looking at those numbers going forwards and you know, inquiring as to the immediate pressures that are coming up.
The next question from David reads as, can you clarify again the number of homes you expect to develop this year and in coming years? And how has your ambition changed over the last 12 months?
Josh, do you want to give the update numbers, please?
Yeah, so I think we're 770 in terms of delivery for the group this year, with around about 570 for Carbon, about 200 in our subsidiary, 54 North. And the coming years are on one of the slides, which fortunately I can't pull up at the minute. But the ambition has been relatively static over the last couple of years, and any ups and downs reflect challenges on site. As I said, we are part of the Homes England strategic partnership, so we've got those 2,200 homes to deliver. In the medium term, post FY28, when that partnership money runs out, we have reduced our development aspirations in the plan, and that's the intention of opening the for-profit housing association, which we expect will be heavily influenced by an investor who will be taking large equity share in that. So our development can be delivered through that. So the aspirations for Carbon itself will be much more modest going forward in the plan, subject, of course, to any information that comes out from the spending review from the government in spring or summer.
Thanks, Scott. And then to save you the trouble, Trish, David's asked another one on the for-profit. What will our equity investment be versus any partner you find? Will your role be purely development and management? Again, I might just ask James to comment briefly, but our working assumption, David, is that we would want to be initially an equal partner in this with some participation in the rewards as well. James, did you want to just add to that?
Yeah, I think the greater percentage equity we have in the new for-profit housing association, the greater impact it has on those group metrics that we've been talking about. As Paul says, we are looking at putting some capital into the for-profits initially, and starting off with an idea of a 50-50 investment. But then if the equity investor wants to go further, I think we would feel relaxed about not keeping up a 50-50 relationship and taking a non-ownership control of the housing association.
Thanks, James. So, David, it's something that we're sort of feeling our way a little bit, and we expect it to evolve over time. So what we start off with is not necessarily the destination. So we'll see how that matures and develops. And on your final point there, please don't apologise for asking questions. It's great to have you engaged, and thank you for your questions. Trish?
Thank you, team. Once again, if you would like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Deal Roadshow and type in your question. And if you would like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue, or press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We do have David from Insight Investment Management on the queue for a verbal question. David, your line is open. You may proceed.
Oh, hello. Sorry, you can actually hear me now.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, that might make things a lot easier rather than typing. Sorry about that. All right, look, final question then. On the net zero side of things, I think, you know, roughly speaking, are looking at 20K per property. I guess the question is that still a realistic number to get every single property to net zero? And if that's an average, what would a high-end cost be for a property, and at what point would you deem it to be uneconomic?
A range of good points there, David. I mean, Scott can explain the mechanics of this. The gross cost, which was sort of in the small print on one of the slides, is over $1 billion. But obviously that includes replacement of, you know, heating sources and that kind of thing, which are already in the plan. When you take out some of the stuff that's already in there or net it off, that's where the 600 odd million figure comes from. So it is a higher figure per property, but it includes some stuff we already plan to do. The full cost
Maybe just on that point, what's the incremental that you're intending to do beyond, say, replacing a boiler with a heat pump and putting in double glazed windows? What's the additional that gets you to net zero then? Is it external cladding or other stuff?
It varies depending on construction type and property. If you have a home that is already pretty well insulated, and at EPCC our portfolio is, and you simply install a heat pump, the net result is the cost to the occupant can go up. So you end up increasing the risk of fuel poverty for some of our customers. So if you want to deliver energy efficiency improvements in a way that is cost beneficial to the occupant, you're probably going to need to go with solar panels, probably battery storage, and for older property types with single brick construction, you're probably going to need external wall insulation as well. Upper end cost for that can be £60,000 to £70,000. Some of our assets, in terms of present value contribution to the business, probably aren't worth that, David. So there's an interesting question about whether we have an active program of disposal, which feels to us like passing the problem on and doesn't feel a particularly satisfactory one for an ethical company like ours. Or this is where we travel, hopefully, in terms of spending review, a recognition that sometimes the right answer is to replace moribund assets with new high-performing energy-efficient ones. At the moment, the grant regime doesn't lend itself to that kind of activity, but we're hoping that certainly through DES, NES, and to a rather lesser extent, Treasury, that there is a recognition that sometimes the right answer is to start again. So where we have properties in our portfolio, where that would be our preference if grant funding is available. Does that help, yeah. David?
Yeah, that's very, very useful. Thank you.
Scott, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that was quite informative. I mean, I'm just looking at some costs here. You know, the cost of external wall insulation can be incredibly high, in the tens of thousands of pounds. So going back to your point, Paul, around clever asset management strategy and whether we do actually want to do that, given the value of the home, is something that we'll have to think very carefully about. We have done some trials on that, but that's been supported by the Social Housing Decarbonisation Fund. So, you know, we're able to monitor and see if it actually works. But yes, I think we would need some substantial grant for some of the homes that require more intrusive measures.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Thank
Trish,
you, David.
We seem to be drying up in terms of written questions. Do you want to have one more shout out, or are we done?
Absolutely. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to submit a written question, click on the Ask a Question button on the upper right of Deal Roadshow and type in your question. And if you would like to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue, or press the raise hand icon on the right side of your Deal Roadshow screen. We will pause here once more to allow more questions to generate.
Trish, I'm thinking people have perhaps had enough of the sound of my dulcet tones, so I wonder if this is an appropriate point to draw close to proceedings.
Absolutely. It appears there are currently no further questions. Handing it back to Paul Fiddeman of Carbon Homes for any final remarks.
Thanks, Trish. So again, thank you very much for dialing in and listening. Thank you for your interest in Carbon Homes. I hope we've sort of given you something interesting to think about in all of that. Thank you for your questions and your comments. That's always really welcome. And we look forward to continuing to work with you in the future. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's EverCall. A replay will be made available at the Carbon Homes website shortly after the call. Thank you and have a great day.